Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New Cyber Frontier. My name is Sean Murray. Today we have a very special guest, Gary Asp, who is the Senior Security and Compliance Engineer at Riverbed Technologies. Also teaches here locally at a local university as an adjunct professor in cybersecurity topics. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me here.
Well, you know, we appreciate you coming in, and we'd actually like to know a little bit about your background. So sure. You're a practitioner, you're an academic. How did you get to where you're at today?
Grew up in Northern Illinois, joined the United States Air Force, and traveled the world as a 3CO, which is the Air Force Specialty Code for Communication Computer Systems Operator. Fell kind of into security around mid-90s, shortly into my military career, and just loved it, fell in love with it. Loved IT, and just security just became a passion of mine. Got out of the military in 04, and went to work for some government contracting companies. Good technical skill sets. You know, I've done everything from running cables underneath floors to server maintenance, to routers, to switches, firewalls, you name it. And then I found myself at Riverbed, working for a really great team.
You know, one of the things that we talk about as practitioners in this industry is there's so many different disciplines for cybersecurity, right?
Yeah.
Not all of them require an interdisciplinary background in IT, but
sure.
It certainly is helpful to have an IT background, so you better understand the terrain, how things communicate, how data passes from point A to point B, and the relationships. Explain how important that is for a cybersecurity practitioner.
Well, you know, asking my students or anyone I work with, I'm the type of guy that likes to take Band-Aid and rip. And so really, I think what we're really getting at here is having that foundational IT understanding, starting at a help desk and working your way for a couple of years at a help desk, maybe going to a server team, a workstation team, whatever, network team, helps you to have the background to know when people are blowing smoke, not to put it too lightly, right? Because as a security professional, your job is to make sure that bad things don't happen to your organization. Or when they do, you stem off that arterial bleeding as quickly as possible. Because your company has a reputational tube of toothpaste. And the minute your company's compromised, there's data exfiltrated, that a little bit of that reputation gets squeezed out. And then you're busy trying to rebuild that reputation. All while your customer's like, what's going on over there? Maybe we ought to take our business elsewhere. So, having that foundational technical background, I feel only makes a security professional better, right? You look at the CISP examination. You have to have so many years of experience in the different common bodies of knowledge before you can even sit for the test. And I think that's good. I think ISC Squared did a great job at making that requirement because they don't want to just have paper CISSPs. People that just get into the industry and they really don't know how to apply it, and they get themselves in over their head. I mean, you don't start building a house with a roof. You start at the foundation, and you work your way up.
Absolutely, and so the contributions that people with a technical background can make will actually help them be successful, mm-hmm. as well as whoever they're working for, right?
Sure.
Having an understanding, and that blowing smoke piece that you're talking about. I find the conversations I'm having with leaders today and hiring managers, they actually put them on a cyber range as part of the interview process.
Sure.
To see if they can demonstrate the skills that they say that they have, which reduces the risk of hiring somebody that's not going to meet those requirements and having to do the process all over again.
Sure, yeah, and I get where you're going there too, but like for instance, one of the things I do in my job is, industry best practice, National Institute for Standards and Technology say, you do risk assessments on pretty much every piece of technology in your network, at least once initially when it goes onto the network, and then every 3 years is a standard. If somebody presents to me a package and things don't line up technically, I'll be able to call them out and say, hey, you're transmitting PII with this particular capability, but you're using FTP. And that way, I have the technical background to say, no, we need to change that. Here are my recommendations. And then I provide the recommendations, lead the C-suite to the water. They can take my recommendations and drink, or they can say, no, we'll accept that risk and we'll keep moving on.
Yeah, because it is really a management decision. It's sure. Our job to articulate what that risk is and allow organization to balance that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back with Gary Asp, the Senior Security Compliance Engineer at Riverbed Technologies. Thank you. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Sean Murray, New Cyber Frontier. We've got a special guest with us today, Gary Asp. He's the Senior Security and Compliance Engineer at Riverbed Technology. Also in the academic side.
Yes, sir.
We talked a little bit before the session about cybersecurity as an enabler.
Yes.
So what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, a lot of times, if you talk to an accountant, you know, anybody a part of your accounting team, they're going to say you have cost centers and you have profit centers. You know, profit centers being the business units that are selling your products, selling your widgets, selling your services, whatever. And then you have, cost centers, you know, business units that cost your organization money. I don't like to look at it in terms of black and white like that. On paper, yes, IT security departments are a cost center, but we need to move away from that mentality, and C-suites, leaders within companies, they need to understand that we're not a cost center, we're an enabler, right? Because you have to ask yourself one very important question. Would that company be around to sell its services and widgets if that IT security organization wasn't there to support them? And maybe they could, you know, trundle along for a while. Maybe they could, you know, get by. But the reality is we are there to make sure that the business is successful. We're there to make sure that that business can continue to sell services and widgets, that it maintains a good reputation in the workspace. I mean, take a look at, years ago when Target, I would have loved to have seen the numbers. Target gets compromised. I bet you their sales just plummeted because people are now thinking, oh, Target's compromised. I'm going to go shop at Walmart. And taking a look at those numbers, you know, and that's real to an organization. And now you're talking about two huge organizations that, you know, can recover. But if you're talking about a fairly small organization, they might not be able to survive that. And so you really have to look at it in terms like that. Can we afford not to have an IT security organization?
Yeah, it goes back to that reputation piece that you were
Yeah, talking. Reputational tube of toothpaste. You squeeze it out, you know, you're going to be sitting there with that popsicle stick, scooping it back into the tube. And all the while, your competitors are going to be like, you know, hey, come on over here. We haven't been compromised.
Right.
And how much of your bottom line is going to be lost?
You know, when we talk about how cybersecurity brings value or is an enabler for the business, oftentimes mm-hmm. we have to understand, you know, the objectives, the goals of the business, and how we can align our cybersecurity program
sure.
to show that we're an enabler. Right?
Sure.
How do we do that? How do we do that with leaders?
With leaders, I think it's showing them the good key performance indicators, KPIs that we talk about, showing them good metrics on how we've impacted the organization, right? Like, for instance, one of my KPIs that I report on quarterly is the number of security risk assessments I do. I do security risk assessments on a quarterly basis, and I show, hey, here are the ones we've approved, here's the ones we've denied, and show that due diligence towards making sure that we're assessing risk to the organization, because every organization's got risk, and my job is to make sure that my leadership knows that risk, they understand it, and they can make an informed decision. and move forward.
So, and that's a key thing, that a lot of IT professionals and sometimes cybersecurity professionals, we're passionate about what we do. We know what contribution is. And sometimes we think that we're the ones that are making that decision,
no.
when we're really the ones who are contributing to leadership to be able to allow that balance with the business and allow them to make informed decisions.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, I tell my students this all the time. You may not think about it, but one of the biggest and most important things you can do as a security professional is be a people person. Build those relationships, right? And to your point, yes, I do the background research, I analyze, and I present that to C-suite. In essence, I lead that C-suite to the water and say, hey, here's the water, my recommendations. If you'd like to drink, feel free to do so, but now you're informed. You know where the water's at. They can decide to drink or they can decide to not drink. You document, and hopefully the right decision is made, you know?
Comes down to the risk appetite, right?
Yeah, absolutely. How risk-averse is that organization? And you've got to paint that story. You could sit there and say, well, we've got a server that has 30 patches that have been applied, and it's running a non-supported operating system. And to a C-suite, they may be like, oh, so what's the big deal? But if you phrase it a different way, say, hey, we've got a server, same scenario, 30 patches not ran, it's an unsupported operating system, and it houses a database that's critical in the sale of our widgets and services, now you're going to get their attention because you've got to speak their language and they got to understand that. And that's where you've got to develop those people skills to help them to understand, hey, this is important. You got to tell that story, because if you don't tell it right, it's not going to get their attention.
And one of the strategies that cybersecurity leaders can use to be to help communicate that is in alignment with other functional areas within the organization, your
sure.
compliance department, your legal department,
sure.
working together to so that they understand. So you go in for a unified approach that helps the organization better understand what the risk really is. What's the financial risk? What's the operational? You talked about reputation risk.
Sure.
And
that's
so
huge.
It all comes back together. Security training and awareness, that fits into part of your discussion.
Yeah, if I'm a bad guy, I mean, where it was Stanley, with great power comes great responsibility or some such like. I, as a security person, I would know the best way to maybe attack my network. But am I going to be more successful trying to compromise a network from the outside in, red teaming, whatever, ethical hacking style? Or would it be easier for me to develop a small little program, a phishing email, something like that, where I try to engage that workforce that may not be educated? They pull up to work in the morning, they're like, oh, there's a thumb drive on the ground. Maybe I should, they take it in and get, Stuxnet is a perfect example of this. Iranian nuclear facilities were closed network. Somehow we were able to get Stuxnet onto the Iranian nuclear facility and shut their nuclear development program down, their ability to develop nuclear material. So how do we do that? Well, it's because we were smart and we developed, and I say we probably, some government organization somewhere, developed thumb drives and started distributing them, and they got in the hand of the Iranian nuclear scientists and they plugged them into their computers at work, a closed network, and infected their network. The same holds true for any organization out there. If they ignore their workforce and don't turn them into quasi-IT security professionals, helping to support the overall security posture of the organization, you're going to find yourself hurting. I was working for one organization. They had no training program whatsoever, and their incidents were through the roof. The minute we started educating the workforce, those incidents started dropping, and I'd much rather have a user come to me and say, hey, Gary, I think there might be something fishy going on here with this email, this telephone call, whatever it is they got, this thumb drive, and have them be wrong than have them say, not say anything, and have them be right. I'd much rather, it's just, it just blows me away. You're really shooting yourself in the leg by not educating your workforce.
So when we talk about that, we encourage good behaviors, we discourage bad behaviors.
Sure.
So give us some examples of what's worked for you.
I'm not above bribery, Spend a couple $1,000s. That's a small budget line item each year in your APO planning. But, buy a bunch of Starbucks gift cards and say, hey, we're going to produce a quarterly newsletter, cybersecurity awareness newsletter. If they read it and answer a few questions in the back and send an email in, then you pick some random winners, right? if somebody's out and they see, you know, like somebody going through a badge door and they don't just leave it open, but they sit there and check everybody's badge who comes through because they're responsible. They open that door. You say, hey, I'm going to identify Joe Blow there for being a security rock star and give him a rock star energy drink with a little certificate or something like that. Do something that is going to incentivize that workforce. It works. People like to get free stuff, you know, and then they get passionate. They get, hey, you know what, this isn't right. And they understand that they're part of that organization's success from a security perspective as well. We absolutely have to rely on that.
Absolutely. If they can understand and understand how it aligns to the success of the organization, especially with the contribution they're making to the organization, you're not just an employee.
Oh, yeah.
You're contributing to our success.
Yep.
Here are some risks as to how you wouldn't be.
Yeah.
How do you discourage unacceptable behavior?
Now we're talking carrot and stick. We talked about the carrot, now we're talking about the stick. There's got to be consequences, unfortunately, for non-compliance. And really, you know, it's the darker side of it. You know, you're going to have to work with your HR, with your legal teams to make sure that you're staying within the bounds of laws and things like that. But, you know, termination could be one. Possible admonishment with enough admonishments where it could potentially lead to termination. Like for instance, we recently implemented something where during incidents or we find that a change has occurred on our network that has not been authorized, we revoke administrative privileges of the person doing that implementation until we can get to the bottom of what happened. Now that has an impact. Think about it in terms of that person that did the unauthorized change. Are they going to be able to do their job without those administrative or elevated privileges?
Yeah, sometimes we can take that and we can turn that into a learning capability, right?
Oh, yeah.
So start off minimal, and if you're going to continue to repeat...
Yeah, don't come right out with a stick, yeah.
Yeah.
Start out slow, work your way up, the message spreads like wildfire.
All right, great message. We're with Gary Asp, Senior Security and Compliance Engineer at Riverbed Technologies. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back. Sean Murray at New Cyber Frontier. Our special guest today is Gary Asp, Senior Security and Compliance Engineer at Riverbed Technology, also a local professor here.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk a little bit about that. What is the reason that you decided to get into the academic side? How does being a practitioner help you be successful on that side as well?
Yeah, you know, I think it started with the Air Force. In the Air Force, they teach us integrity first, service before self, excellence in all you do, which is something that's the Air Force core values, and it's something that I've tried to maintain personally throughout my life. Am I perfect? Heck no, I've made my fair share of mistakes, you know, but the Air Force is very big on OJT, on the job training, and helping other people to learn, you know, and grow. And I found a lot of value in that. I find a lot of self-fulfillment in that, you know. I love it. When I can explain a topic to a student, light bulb comes on, they get it. I know that I've helped that particular person to improve upon themselves. And I think that's where it's at, you know. It's adopting a lifetime learning perspective versus I'm just going to have to get this certification and I'm done. I'm just going to have to get this degree and then I'm done. You know, you should always be pushing yourself, always be trying to excel and make yourself into a better, you know, person, a better engineer, a better father, you know. And I think it's important, and it gives me a lot of fulfillment to stand up there and teach a class and help to grow and shape minds. And I tell my students, hey, I hope I learn a little bit from you too. I don't expect it, but if you come out of this term a little smarter than when you came in, I've done my job.
Well, and you take a look at this industry, this career field is always changing.
It's slowly.
One of the reasons. why I enjoy it is I'm not doing the same thing every single day. Some of the processes are, you talk about maintaining and your assessments to keep that baseline. But, you know, organization wants to succeed. They want to venture into other areas. Ingenuity. And so we have to help guide them. How do you accomplish that with your organization?
Well, as far as like helping people understand what they want to do next, or
risk, as far as we're introducing new technologies.
Sure.
We may not understand the risk associated with those technologies, but it provides a capability for the organization to be successful.
Right.
How do you help those organizations along those business units succeed at the same time addressing the cybersecurity risk?
Yeah, sure, sir. So I'll give an example. I introduced plan of actions and milestones. Fairly common in the industry. It's industry standard. NIST supports it. And there were a lot of people that just had questions about, well, why do we need this? What are we using it for? And so I just conducted an hour-long WebEx. You know, I work from home. I did an hour-long WebEx where I recorded it. I developed the program. I modified the POANM, you know, the standard template that you can find out on the web right now or at NIST. To be tailored to the needs of Riverbed, so I eliminated quite a few columns. I help them to understand what it's used for. It's a living, breathing document to help track statuses of different, risks, not per se, because it's not always just risks.
Anything that goes on with the system. Could be risks, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a way to, it's a living, breathing document to help track the different activities that need to occur against that particular asset, right, that particular system. And a way to help align resources, personnel, time, whatever, and especially from like a director level who's doing APO budget planning, saying, oh, you know what, we need to make sure we are able to, you know, take care of these line items. I need to now include this in my annual budget. Because if you don't have budget for it, it's not going to get done, which is another huge aspect of, you know, helping people understand the full life cycle of a system, right? Anybody can throw a system on the network,
sure.
Right? But if you don't adequately plan, we got to patch that system too. That's going to take time. Oh, have we budgeted that in? You're going to have a hard time maintaining that system properly through its life cycle.
Yeah, it sounds like more of a discussion on that maturity life cycle.
Sure.
Yeah, systems maintenance, the strategy we develop working with those other organizations to address those types of issues, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The importance of governance, like external governance. We were talking about that earlier before the program. You know, depending on your industry, you know, you got GBLA or you got FISMA or you got HIPAA.
SOX.
You know, the governance aspect and how it ties to compliance is so significant in our career field, in our industry. What's your perspectives on that?
Well, I think that a company, obviously, they've got to give some time to it because, I mean, you know, you can talk about serious fines, possible even, you know, criminal prosecution with some of these when you do not comply. And you can, I think, look at it two different ways. You can say, okay, let's develop a program that's going to allow us to be able to be Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, right? All of our financially relevant systems, right? Or you can be forward-leaning and say, we're going to go after SOX certification. As part of SOX certification, I guarantee you that you're going to be able to, if you get SOC 2, Type 2 certified, you are going to be setting yourself up, you're going to forward-lean as an organization to say, we're going to be able to be compliant with the regulatory bodies that we need to be compliant with because we've already forward-leaned and invested in our organization to become SOX certified or to become ISO certified or whatever, you know, flavor you want to pursue. And I think that, you know, is not just a, you know, easy thing that you can pencil whip at all. Right now we're going through SOX auditing and it's, you know, it's about, you know, the auditors come, they evaluate, you know, our due diligence, due care around the financially reporting systems, our security controls that protect those systems, how we check and audit user accounts, how we check and make sure that there's no conflict of interest as far as like, you know, they have permissions on one system and this system and this system, and when you combine all those together, it creates a segregation of duty issue, right, or a SOD issue, right? So now, you know, how do we handle that, you know, and so you've got to put a lot of time, a lot of planning into making sure that your organization can remain compliant, because it's going to affect your bottom line if you don't remain compliant with these regulatory bodies. I mean, HIPAA, you know, Health Information Portability Act, Accountability Act, right? You deal with any type of medical record whatsoever, and you don't handle those properly, they are going to pound you. I mean, that's one of the ones where you can really get yourself into trouble. PCI DSS, Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, if you store, process, or transmit any type of financial transaction, you better remain compliant to PCI DSS, or otherwise you're going to find yourself not being able to transact with that particular card brand because they'll strip it. You know, MasterCard will say, nope, you're not PCI DSS compliant, you can't process MasterCard anymore. And what does that mean to the organization's bottom line? You know, they can't sell their services, widgets, as openly or freely as they would have been if, had they remained compliant. So, you know, it's a very, very important aspect to an organization, and one that I'm sure many out there, I'm sure, probably just shaking their heads and you don't even know. You know, it can be frustrating at times too, because it seems like auditors are always asking for the moon, and maybe you can only provide them the stars.
Well, and there's a relationship. You talked a little bit earlier about the NIST risk management framework, and we just talked about governance. You know, so how important is it for choosing a good framework with a good controls database to help align those compliance requirements depending on those industries?
Well, yeah, obviously. And I mean, that's going to be largely dependent upon the space that you conduct your business in, right? So if you're a DOD or federal contractor, you know, obviously, you know, NIST, ARMA, it's going to be more important than, say, PCI DSS. You may not have a payment card network, right?
Sure.
So, identifying those, you know, and you're going to have to work with the legal team and make sure you understand the contracts that you're going through and the work that you're executing so that you know what frameworks you need to be compliant with. Because it's not always easy to say, oh, we need to be compliant with this or that. But when you're talking about something, you know, like a SOC compliance or a ISO compliance, you know, those services that you pay for, that's going to speak to due diligence, due care, and forward leaning. Because if you're doing the requirements to maintain SOC level certification, if you're doing the forward leaning to maintain a level ISO certification, or if you're developing applications and you want to get your application certified underneath the common criteria, for instance, it shows that forward leaning so that any other compliance or regulatory body, it's going to make your job that much more easier.
And it can get pretty complex. You know, we were talking earlier, you've got U.S. laws, you've got European, like GDPR. Mm-hmm. If you're a global company, how do you get through that, the complexities of that terrain?
Have a good legal team. Have good lawyers. Because they're going to be the ones that are ultimately going to tell you. So, like, if we have an incident, and maybe it involves data exfiltration, right? One of the first things we're going to want to know, or you're going to want to know as an IT security professional, is, okay, what data is involved, what are the customers involved, and where are they located at, right? And then you interface with your legal team, say, hey, what are the regulatory requirements for these different areas? For instance, if it involves anyone, regardless of whether the event happened in the EU or not, but it involves an EU citizen, you now need to be GDPR compliant, right? And like you were saying earlier, you know, when we were discussing 4% of the, was it gross revenue?
Gross revenue of
the company. That's big money, you know, and that affects an organization. When you're looking at incidents, when you're looking at things like that, you know, these are the kinds of questions you need to be asking yourself. Obviously you want to stem off the arterial bleeding and make sure that you stop whatever the event's happening, obviously, and then get to the root of it. And then depending on how you develop your incident response program, you know, whether the company wants to prosecute, whether the company doesn't want to prosecute, that makes the determination whether you want to include forensics, which then takes an incident response, you know, and puts the price tag way up, or you just want to get to the root of the issue and fix it and then move on and then update and redline and lessons learned, etc., so that hopefully you can prevent it from happening again in the future.
When we talk about the future, what do you think? Next 3 to 5 years?
Oh, man. Everything's moving to the cloud. And that in and of itself, the cloud is great. It's good and it's bad. But you really have to understand your SLAs. Like, I've heard horror stories about, like, DDoS attacks happening. And depending on how your contract's written with that particular provider, if you have a DDoS happening, and you don't have some type of protection or something written in there, your bill that month, that cloud provider could be through the roof.
Sure.
Because it just starts spinning up systems to support that DDoS attack. So I think coming up in the future, people are going to really have to understand aspects of the cloud and moving to the cloud, which is significantly going to impact organizations' business continuity planning, their disaster recovery, which is part of your, DRP is part of your business continuity planning, and you know, it's going to greatly change the landscape. You know, when you think about these terms, you think about like hot sites and cold sites and warm sites, but those are probably going to go away, because if you've got a cloud provider like, say, Amazon, AWS, you have a disaster that affects your primary operating location, and you can just pick up and operate somewhere else fairly minimally if the majority of your capability is in the cloud. So I think, going forward in the future, cloud is going to continue to be predominantly huge. I think that just attracting professionals into the industry, we're at a huge deficit for security professionals. Through the economic downturn in the early 2000s, we had that housing crisis and everything. I've never had a problem with, finding a job, because every organization needs competent IT professionals, IT security even more so. So I think, attracting talent to that, to the industry, is going to be pretty huge going forward in the future. And helping to understand, helping business leaders to understand the whole cost center, profit center, we're an enabler, that aspect of it, which I think is happening a lot more. I know our C-suite is very much plugged in and understands the importance of the security team to my organization, and that's encouraging.
Well, so, it's one of those things that we talk about as far as continuing to educate the board, making sure that they understand the risks associated with what's going to happen 3 to 5 years.
Sure.
We're starting to see, and we may just be 100% in the cloud.
Yeah.
At some point, nobody wants to maintain an entire infrastructure, especially if, like you said, that my expertise is I'm a widget engineer. That's what I want to focus on.
Yeah.
I'll have somebody else manage the risk associated with all these other things that helps my business successful.
Yeah.
Gary, it's been great having you.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
We appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your perspectives.
Sure.
This is Sean Murray with the New Cyber Frontier. Again, thanks, Gary. We'll look forward to having you on sometime in the future.
I appreciate
your contribution.
Yeah, thank you.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
Enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.